I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Which phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
It is a truly frightening image. There is just no other way to describe it. Somewhere deep in the bowels of Croke Park stand two men in front of a wall, facing each other, chatting. Malachy Clerken, fine journalist and an average-sized human being, is one of those men. But towering over him, to put it mildly, is the freakish physical form of Garrod Hegarty, fine hurler and scorer of 2 goals and 2 points in one half of an All-Ireland final. This guy looks like he's from a different species to Mal, not just a bigger version of human being. Welcome to Monday Second Captain's Podcast, All-Ireland. Hi, Murph.
Hey, Ul, how's it going? You all right?
I probably should have said welcome to Monday's All-Ireland Second Captain's Podcast. Whatever way I garble that, we're into the show now, Murph. And looking at this photograph, you've got to say Cork never stood a chance. A very important detail here, Hegarty is in his socks and he looks about three times the size and height and girth of Mal.
He's holding his dinner as well in like a little plastic container. And I mean, Malachy obviously tweeted out this photograph. He got a lot of very funny responses. There were a few suggesting that he had just taken, that Garrod Hegarty had just taken Mal's lunch off him. I know.
Should not laugh. But Cork did have some big lads as well, but they were more.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Malachy wasn't, you know, he wasn't on the Cork team, you know? He wasn't a key cornerstone of Kieran Kingston's pre-match game plan. And I suppose we should be thankful for that. But, yeah, there's no doubt about it, Owen. I mean, you were there.
Yeah.
You bore witness to the just the sheer physicality of Limerick, just how big they are.
It's actually insane. They're just, the Cork lads, as Mark Horgan sitting beside me said, Cork look like they've got a few lads who will be big in a couple of years, once they fill out a little bit. You know, they're a lot of tall guys, but a little on the skinny side, only in comparison to, you know, they were fine physical specimens themselves, I'm sure, but compared to these Limerick lads, it really was quite striking.
While you're waiting to fill out, Limerick are not the team you want to be playing. You know, you want to have your filling out well and truly done before you come up against Limerick. But I mean, and you know what? It's funny because you obviously saw it in the flesh yesterday, and I've seen it in the flesh a few times as well. And you can get so wowed by just how bloody big they are that you overlook what magnificent hurlers they are, and their first touch is so good, and their hands are so good. That's not as visceral as just seeing how bloody big they are. You know, it's hard to get past it when you see them, just how bloody massive they are. But I mean, like, what are we talking about here today, Owen?
Greatest half of hurling ever seen, Murph? Greatest All-Ireland final performance ever seen?
Yeah, well, there's Pat Nolan was on Twitter, the Irish Mirror journalist. 318 from 28 shots to lead by 13 points at halftime, Pat said. By comparison, As Pat recalls, Kilkenny scored 216 from 20 shots in the first half against Waterford in 2008 to lead by 17 points at halftime. And I mean, that's the only half that bears even the remotest comparison. I mean, maybe Tipperary in the first half against Limerick in the Munster final this year, leading this Limerick team by 10 points before, you know, having that lead overhauled by the time the third quarter came around. That's a pretty good half of hurling, particularly given what we've seen since. But yeah, I mean, other than the Kilkenny 2008 game, like that's the only contender, because what you're talking about is just performance on a level that's actually hard. It's actually hard to put into words how good they were. I mean, you know, you talk about a coach putting in place a plan for their team before a game starts, and then you have just 35 minutes of that plan just working perfectly. Everything going pretty much to plan. I mean, it's not really something that happens all that often.
Like, despite conceding an early goal themselves, it should be said as well. There was for the first 5 minutes, you're thinking this could be one of the most epic occasions, yeah, one of the most epic matches you're ever likely to witness. Then by about 10, 15 minutes, I know there was still only a point or two in it for a while, there were some warning signs and you're starting to think, is this actually going to be just one of the great exhibitions by one team, which is what it turned out to be.
Yeah, and you know, there are oftentimes in this sort of situation, you know, like hurlers from the 80s and 90s saying, God, like these teams they're putting up scores at halftime that, you know, they'd have won many All-Irelands, you know. Well, 3-18, which is what Limerick scored in the first half yesterday, would have won the 2018 All-Ireland, which started this run of Limerick dominance. Like, Limerick beat Galway 3-16 to 2-18 in the 2018 All-Ireland Hurling Final. Wow. So that's how far Limerick have progressed, even in the last 3 years.
Yeah, let's hear the goals going in as called on Live 95.
Limerick on the attack now, Dan. Limerick on the attack is right. Is that man Keane Lynch again? Throws it back up and catches it. Hits towards Garrod Hegarty. Shot at a goal!
Get in!
Garrod Hegarty buries the ball to the back of the net. The first green flag in the All-Ireland final. 2 minutes in. Seamus Flanagan gets the puck out straight into the hands of Aaron Gillan. Goal! Shot! Buried to the back of the net by Aaron Gillan. The quick puck out once more for Nicky Quaid. He's catching us all out. What a goal, James
and
Ryan.
Takes the ball on the jersey being pulled. Oh. Gets the hand pass in towards Garrod Hegarty on the 21-yard line. Has a man inside. Steps two ways. Buries it.
Oh, and
Garrod Hegarty with the second goal for him. The third for Limerick. They're 13 points clear. What a goal by Garrod Hegarty.
Donald Sullivan, James Ryan and Luke Liddy on commentary there for Limerick's Live 95. I mean, if you are going to keep racking up the All-Irelands, you might as well put on a few goal scoring displays while you're at it. We're going to chat to Malachy today about his traumatic experience standing beside the big man. Also, Jamie put a lot of thought into it.
I mean, he just interviewed him. Like, Garrod Hegarty didn't actually steal anything from Malachy, right?
I know,
you know, we
I
should
know.
Say. I mean, he's just a big lad, you know? Yeah. There's just a lot of him there, that's all.
Jamie put a lot of thought into a Cork tactical plan that might have had some outside shot of working, but I'm not sure. We didn't see that plan in effect. I'm not sure what plan we did see in effect. We'll talk to Jamie about that. You did mention I was at the game, Murph. My first match back since COVID times. Yep. Talk about in at the deep end. I mean, you know, the match itself was... Well, put it this way. Let's go back. The atmosphere in advance, quite nice around town. Walked up from O'Connell Street. Good few fans there. It's like, wow, this is actually... I wasn't sure what I was expecting, but, you know, a half full Croke Park... I thought, you know, maybe there wouldn't be the usual sort of intensity as there is in an All-Ireland final day. But no, there was plenty of that, particularly coming from the Cork fans who, I thought, it appeared massively outnumbered the Limerick fans on the walk to the stadium. But I think that was only because they were making such an impression on me. They were, let's just say they were a little younger, it felt to me, the Cork fans, and a little drunker than the
they
Limerick
skewed
boys.
Younger and drunker.
Yeah.
They?
yeah. There was a bit of, you know, as you got closer to the stadium there, there's a bit of standing up on tables outside, boozers, really going for it, you know, oxygen music festival style.
Levels of debauchery. Wow.
Like, not sure. Yeah, so got a pint outside one of the pubs, brought it across the other side of the road for a slightly more relaxing pre-match drink until suddenly a young Limerick lad comes out of nowhere, cracks a stick off a wooden beam from a construction site and starts wielding this cane at his friends. And what? You know, you can always judge a potentially unfolding situation by the reaction of the people around, as in his friends.
Yeah.
They look kind of worried. They looked a little bit on edge when this lad broke this stick and starts wielding it at them. His eyes were glassy, I'm not going to lie. I got a little bit of a pang of what is about to happen here. But thankfully, well, actually, I don't know what happened there, but I didn't read any reports of any stick-wielding maniacs.
Yeah, thankfully, nothing happened in to you or within your earshot. But that's honestly, the main thing.
Oh man, I was like, my senses were gone crazy. I was like, what is this? I haven't been at any match for so long and this is all happening around it. And then inside was a lot more civil, obviously, and it felt like a full house, except that you had a bit of room on either side. So it was kind of perfect. Yeah, yeah. The atmosphere felt like there's 80,000 people here, but actually I can rest my arms, I can rest my arms to the right. And
watching it on TV yesterday, I mean, I think there might be a lesson to be learned here for the GAA when, you know, like I've been at All-Ireland semi-finals with 40,000 people at it and the atmosphere is absolutely moribund. And I think it's got something to do with the fact that, you know, like they'll close the upper tiers, you know, and they'll just fill the lower tier. And then, you know, you're still looking at these massive banks of empty seats. Whereas if you spread 40,000 people out actually across the entire stadium, the atmosphere is a lot better and it looks a lot better on TV. And maybe that's something for the GAA to think about in the post-COVID times.
It's funny, next year. It's funny you mentioned the upper tiers because we were in the lower Cusack, right? And the parade starts, you know, and the parade is kind of a mad thing. Anyway, you know, I don't know how many.
Yeah, it's a mad, brilliant thing.
It is weird when you haven't seen it for a while. We're looking at you going, this is bizarre, but I love it. And it started off kind of around the far end and just, you know, the building, the noise it's building and all the other parts of the stadium. And then it comes around to where you are and everyone's going mad. But it was so loud. And there was, I don't know, do they actually pipe additional noise in? I mean, I don't want to accuse the GAA of fake crowd noise here at Croke Park, but it was so loud coming from the tops, like the noise was rolling down from the upper levels of this, especially the stand behind us or the upper Cusack. I thought that can't be real, or maybe it's just my body
Nicky English on Sky said that he'd never heard any noise like it. He was completely bowled over by the end of the parade.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it could just be that you're not used to it, or I don't know what acoustics, what exactly was going on, but it was like, it's the most cliche thing in the world, right? But it was proper, and I'm getting them a little bit again now. It's proper goosebumps, you know?
Yeah.
And your adrenaline's going, you're like, Jesus, this is absolutely mad.
It was mad and wild.
So
and
beautiful.
A lot of fun.
And I do know, and I can see why people from other sports are, more particularly actually people from other fields like the arts and stuff, are looking at this going, for fuck's sake. How can 40,000 people be allowed to have so much fun and our sector is still closed and stuff? And I don't really have a retort to that to anyone listening. I just know it obviously is a big cultural occasion itself and a huge sporting occasion, and it was good fun inside the ground. And you know, then the match started, like I said, it looked like it was going to be epic, but it ended up being just a joy to witness. We had pretty good seats to see what Limerick were doing the first half. I gotta say, whatever about how amazing it was to see their forwards, their team in action, I felt extremely sorry for the Cork fullback line. These lads were just bedraggled by about 15-20 minutes into the game. I'm not saying they were all, you know, flawless themselves. There were a few mistakes made, but it was a bit tricky with just this amazing, accurate fastball kept coming in, and they're like 2-on-2 against such ridiculously good Limerick players who are shimmying left and right and scoring points or hand passing off for goals. And the poor Cork lads are like, just get us out of here. We cannot do anything.
And, you know, the hope would be that lessons would be learned, and that you just can't do that. You can't leave two fellas in there to be run left and right by Seamus Flanagan and Aaron Gillan as they were, and like, that's just a lesson Cork are going to have to learn, and a lesson hurling is going to have to learn, I think.
We're going to talk about all that today. Later this week, especially for World Service members, we are going to look ahead to Kerry against Tyrone in the football, and you know what that means, don't you? It's Flinner versus McConville. The gloves are off.
He mistimed it, absolutely. Red card. But the way he's been abused online has just been, in my eyes, is being appalling. And like some of the pundits, Oisin included, on the Sunday game, haven't really helped the situation because.
In what respect, Paul?
Well, I know
what did I say in the Sunday game that was bad? I said it was a mistimed challenge, but it's a set
off. Shocking. I said
the result of the tackle was shocking. That's what I said.
I wholly agree with the sentiment.
How has that not helped? I mean, what do you want me to say? It was a great challenge. He tamed the shoulder perfectly. I don't get that. I don't get any of what you're saying. I mean, I get the online abuse. I don't know. I actually don't know what goes on online, but I'm pretty sure it's horrendous. But John Small says Owen McLaughlin up to hit him a fair shoulder, and he didn't. And the duty of care is on John Small, okay? And let's take John Small for a second. See that incident there? Yes, he should have got a red card, but that was a genuine attempt to get a perfect shoulder in. When he hit Ryan O'Donoghue a punch in the stomach in the corner of the field, that wasn't genuine. When McCarthy hit O'Connor, that's not genuine. And you'd think that people shouldn't report on that.
No,
anti-Dublin bias. Anti-Dublin bias is the biggest load of bollocks that that is pure, total and utter dung. That's what that is.
Okay, good man, O'Shane. Well, you're obviously not online looking at it, because I was just, you know...
I'm not online. I don't need to be online.
Yeah, I mean, I can't guarantee it's going to be as heated again this week, but it has been like that for a couple of weeks in a row, in fairness. So there is a chance to hear that one. You'll need to be a member. Sign up on secondcaptains.com for only a £5 a month plus VAT. You can also leave again at the end of the month. So you could actually just sign up to hear what happens with O'Shane and Flynn this week if you want to, and, you know, and then leave again at the end of the month. And you can also hear all our old pieces if you become a member. So you can hear the full heated debate about the coverage of the John Small incident and O'Shane's retorts to Paul's accusations of an anti-Dublin bias knocking around the place. I mean, you did get the gist of O'Shane's response there.
Anti-Dublin bias is the biggest load of bollocks.
But there was loads more to the chat, which is well worth hearing. And they've been, aside from that, Murph, I know it's a bit like, it's a little bit clickbaity there, you know, it's a little bit like, here's this. But that is what happened. It's very representative of the conversation that went on. And also, tactically, Flynn's been great addition to the coverage this year. And O'Shane's just the best in the business. So.
Come for the tear ups, but stay for the analysis. You know, exactly. I'm down with that.
That's what I should have just said there. Yeah, that'll do the job. Also, sign up for our Premier League coverage. We've got a full football podcast coming out tomorrow. And there'll be another one on Thursday, I'm sure, as well. Both for members, and there'll be a shorter Premier League podcast today with Ken available to everybody. So there's a hell of a lot going on in the world service. Limerick are, once again, the All-Ireland champions.
Sport is a great thing, Páraic, and especially hurling. Our sport, the greatest sport that was ever played by any man. They're getting their award today, mixed with this brilliant blend of youth, fire and enthusiasm, and so thrilled for them. Clareman, rivals of ours all our lives. But you know... The Cranberries go up around Crow Park. Dolores, one of their own, Páraic. Magic, magic moment for them.
Well, it's a highly emotional scene.
Oh, no, my stomach is burning here, lads. I tell you, oh, dear.
Who's going to win it, guys?
Limerick.
Excuse me?
Dolores! On your fire!
He didn't go to blow the onion bag after backing it in. He went to place it to the corner.
Limerick are on the brink of a historic breakthrough at Croke Park.
Limerick better wake up here because Galway are back in the game big time.
Cruised into the top of the net. Is there any into the drama, Páraic?
And Galway are within one of Limerick.
It's hard to watch.
Oh, man, I don't know what to say here.
Could he possibly... From 2-3 metres outside his own 45, the greatest sport that was ever played by any man.
That's a massive ask.
If you wanted one man in the history of hurling to hit it for you, you might want it to be Joe Kenning.
I think the long wait is over.
How long is it again to wait?
Well, since 2007.
Well, 1973 is the last time they won.
Limerick have it! Limerick are coming away with
it! Yeah! If the rest of the world only knew about this sport, this is incredible.
Limerick have beaten Galway. Woo! 1973 and today.
I don't know exactly what Cork's plan was out there yesterday, but they didn't follow the Jamie Wall master plan, that's for sure. Commiserations, Jamie.
Thanks, Owen. Yeah, it was one of those days. To be fair, I don't know. Short now of putting 20 fellas out in the field, I don't know what plan would have worked yesterday against that juggernaut.
It was incredible. We will come to Cork, but we've got to start with Limerick. And we've got Malachy Clerk in here. Malachy, I know where I'm starting with you. Garrod Hegarty, I should say. A big unit.
He is a big lad, yeah. I think if he really works at it, you know, Garrod Hegarty, he could become quite the physical specimen if he really, you know,
he has the raw materials.
I tell you the one thing he will never be. He will never be 42 years old, grey and 5'6". So I'll always have that over him. But other than that, he is a top chap in every sense of the word.
It was pointed out also that he was in his socks for the photograph.
It was pointed out by you, I saw. Let's not mince words here. Yes. No, the one lesson I took from that pick was, and I should know this by now, but never interview the players in front of the room where the photographers send their pictures to the newspapers. Otherwise, in a fit of boredom, James Crombie from Info will pap you and make you look very small.
Yeah, they can see a good photo developing. Listen, Jamie, what superlative do you want to use for that Limerick first half performance? Greatest All-Ireland performance of all time? Greatest hurling performance? Greatest sports team performance of all time?
Well up there, definitely, yeah. Like, it's funny, like, Well, I watched it. I watched the first half back this morning in the cold light of day. And it was really, it's not even a first half. Like, look, they were going well for the whole game, obviously. But I suppose Cork were staying with them early doors. But from minute 22 to 35, it was just like, Jesus Christ. Like, normally people go into, like, you know, people talk about like the moving quarter, like, or whatever they want to call it, whatever phrase is on it at that time. It's that quarter after half time. But Limerick have obviously just decided, nah, why bother waiting until half time? We're actually going to blitz you right before half time. And like, just that minute 22 to 35, like I said, I think that's roughly when Gillan got his goal. And I wouldn't mind, but it actually came off the back of a great Cork score. Cork after getting a great point. And next thing, short puck out, criminal stuff, like for a short puck out to go to, it actually went to Dermot Burns, but it went to the centre back spot. And I suppose when you're coaching teams, like, and you might be coaching them, look, we're going to give such and such the puck out. We're going to, you know, we're going to sit back and try and cut out the space in front of the two wing forwards and all that. Like, you almost always say we're not letting it go to the middle, to the centre back, because it can hold us open either side. Or the other thing is, like, you won't let it go to certain players. You know, you'll always pick out, like, okay, lads, he doesn't get a short puck out. Funny enough, like, when we played LIT years ago in the Fitzgibbon Cup in 2017, and Davey was over them, so obviously there was a lot of short puck outs and a lot of working the ball out. Like, and I, Murph can vouch for this, because I actually sent him all my notes a couple of weeks ago from that year. One of the things, like, that was very clear for us was Burns doesn't get a short puck out. Like, it was like, Burns does not get a short puck out in space. Because it's either a score or it's a really good ball in. And lo and behold, sharp puck out to Burns in the centre. Flanagan moves right and left, which we spoke about last week, causes Cork a problem. Bang, ball across goal. And like, it was game over the minute Gillan scored that goal. Like, I would say that was game over, basically.
Yeah, game over at that stage, Mal. And, you know, kind of the scary thing about this Limerick team, actually, is that they've acquired this habit now of peaking and bringing their absolute A game to the All-Ireland final. And that in itself is a pretty worrying thought, not just because they're going to be in a lot of All-Ireland finals, but also it speaks to just how perfectly prepared they are as a team, that you can get to an All-Ireland finals and say with a large degree of confidence, we're going to play better today than we have all year.
Yeah, to an extent, Mark, but like, I think somebody was telling me last night, I must check this, actually. I shouldn't be saying it without checking it. But that their winning margin over the last whatever number of games is an aggregate of 90 points over maybe their last 8 games. Something like that. Something ludicrous like that. Mm. Like, you can say, yes, that they saved their best for the All-Ireland final. But, like, the second half of the Munster final was pretty good. And responding to Waterford absolutely lurrying into them for the first quarter of the semi-final was also pretty good. And I think they have a level of performance that they hit. Okay, this is, yesterday was insane, really. It really was. Like, it broke every record that you could imagine. Like, Jamie is absolutely right to pinpoint the Gillan goal as the time when it was all over. But it's actually earlier than you think, Jamie. Like, that was the 14th minute. That was before the water break. And Cork had hung in there. They'd stuck, like I thought one of the very cool things about yesterday was how the level of performance that Limerick brought forced Cork into a level of performance, at least in the beginning, that they absolutely just needed. Like, Shane Kingston, I would say, against any other team in any other match, I know Cork have been concentrating on goals all year, but you wouldn't necessarily have said a goal was on when he got the ball in the 45. But the terms and conditions had been set down. Limerick had scored 1-1 from their first two attacks. Cork needed a goal. There was 3.5 minutes gone in the bloody All-Ireland final. And so like, they needed one of the great All-Ireland final goals. Like, it'll be totally forgotten, Shane Kingston's goal, but it was a fantastic goal. But they needed that just to stay, you know, within an ass's roar. And like, when Gillan scored that goal on 14 minutes from that beautiful movement between him and Seamus Flanagan, just before he scored that goal, like, Cork had got it back to a point. It was 1-5 to 1-4 at that stage. And yet when Gillan buried it, like the game was over. You know, they like that was you were kind of going, look, Cork can hang in there. They can, like, their, I think their first 3 points were Huggy Freeze, or maybe their first two. No, the first three were Huggy Freeze. Just hanging in there and hanging in there. Then Jack O'Connor got a point, and Niall O'Leary came up the pitch and got a point straight from the puck out after Gillan's goal. But, like, you just knew that they're, that, like, you're not going to be able to withstand that level of pummeling from Limerick. And exactly in the second quarter, they just absolutely out the door. Like, Peter Casey was on his way to man of the match. I know all the hosannas are being sung to Cade Lynch today, but like, Peter Casey hit five points from five shots by the 25th minute,
and he could have still got it.
I was thinking in normal circumstances, when the Sunday game do man of the match on the night of an All-Ireland final, and they do a short list of three, like, he went off in the 25th minute, and he would have had to have been in the three. Yeah.
what are the parameters for man of the match other than he didn't make one mistake in the entire time that he was on the field?
do you know why I'd have actually looked at giving him man of the match is because he was the man of when it was a match.
Yes.
if that's a way of putting it.
Yeah.
Do you know, 100%. Like, he actually was, like, he was a big difference maker when at least you would have said Cork had a chance of winning that game. You know, for that
totally,
brief 15
and you saw, and you're 100% right, Jamie, because at the like, even for his fifth point, when he sort of did the little kind of shimmy and shake around Niall O'Leary, like that was almost like, it was a brilliant point, and he did exactly what you needed to score the point, but it was almost showboating, and it was 25 minutes in, and it put them 2-12 to 1-7 up. I say, looking at my notes, like, the game, that was the game done. 2-12 to 1-7 in the 25th minute,
and that was all from play.
Interesting, you use that. Malky used the term showboating there. I got a sense, like, it was amazing. This is the first time I've seen Limerick in the flesh. This current Limerick team, Jamie, and obviously the physicality and the size and all those things that everyone talks about are pretty obvious, and we saw that from the amazing photograph with Malky involved. But they really look like they enjoy inflicting that sort of damage. You know, they're I suppose they're every game players, but I kind of got the sense, and even they're geeing up the crowd in the last few minutes. Like, there's no, I know they're called a machine and this kind of stuff, but I actually got the sense there was a lot of exuberance about what they did. They are absolutely loving what they were doing in the first half, which is as it should be in sport.
Well, do you know what? Like, I think Murph, you were talking about it, where you were saying, like, that this is the way young fellas want to play. Do you know, like, they don't actually want to play, like, you know, there's often a lot of talk about, like, coaches are coaching the joy out of the game, and players are having to do this, and they're having to play short, and they're having to do this. Like, these guys actually, they want the ball. They don't want to play this 50-50 game. They like playing it short, running, you know, kind of. These guys are, like, I suppose you have an element of, you know, the current crop of players are very often people who are reared on a multi-sports kind of experience, at least watching, you know, in a watching brief. Like, and they look at the likes of Barcelona, for example, the last couple of years, and they'll say, why should we give the ball away? Like, why on earth would we give them the ball? Why not pass it to my teammate who's 10 yards away? And then he'll pass it to the right person, and he's got, like, and I suppose what I mean by that is, like, and it gets to the heart of what Limerick are so good at and why they're so hard to beat is, like, and I remember speaking to Gavin O'Mahony about this a couple of years ago in Kilmallock, like, and he used this term, so it's obviously something maybe that they've spoken about inside there. It's like, they change the point of attack so often before they hit the ball in. And, like, you know, Michael Deignan was on talking about, you know, the triangles that they move the ball up into. Like, so, like, there's two elements. Like, they look, it's not on, they move it 15, 20 yards to the right, and then all of a sudden, like, the whole play shifts. You know, the space is different from that area, and, like, that's how you get pulled from pillar to post by them. It's like, they change the point of attack, and they change it so quickly and so well that, like, you don't have a hope inside. When they decide to deliver the ball, it's on their terms 9.5 times out of 10. Like, and that was probably the biggest difference between the two teams, even in the first half yesterday. And, like, like I said, I watched it back this morning. I actually thought Cork were doing quite well. Like Malachy said, they nearly had to be doing quite well. Cork's goal, if you remember, actually comes from a very kind of a Limerick style moment where they changed the point of attack 5 and 6 times and eventually dragged Burns out to the 65. The ball went over him into that channel. That again, look, I think we did speak about last week that there's a bit of joy to be got in behind him, and Cork did get a little bit of joy in behind him. It was probably the only place that they got a bit of joy. But like, that goal was a very much a trademark Cork goal. It was quite like the Kilkenny goal. Came from a short puck out that was worked back around twice and then into the space and over it. But Limerick were doing that as a matter of course all day. And the biggest difference between the two was very often Cork's pass went to feet or went to, like, you know, 2 yards away from the hand. So it required a touch and then it was moved on. And these are all seconds. And it's a, like, it's literally half second here, half second there that lets them get set. Whereas you look at Limerick's build-up play, like, I would say very, very rarely, if ever, does the pass not go straight to hand. Like, and, you know, again, you talk about coaching. You coach young fellas nowadays and they all want to take this little touch on the hurley before they catch the ball. And I sound like an old man here, but, like, Limerick, literally the ball, like, and I'm not. Like, Limerick play the ball 15 yards, which I love, but it's 15 yards and it's to hand. And it just means that they are literally, they're wasting no time. So even though they're playing it short, they're playing it fast, if that makes sense. They're playing it short and fast, and it's just moving you all the time. And that was where Cork got destroyed, you know. Like, it means that, it means you can't hold your half back line. And it's something that, again, we might talk about in a second. Like, Cork's half back line went very man to man with their men, and it meant the inside line get destroyed. But because Limerick's passes all go to hand, there's no opportunity for someone to put pressure on them, you know, whereas Cork's were hitting passes slightly to feet, requires a touch, and then next thing you're getting milled by Gillan, you're getting milled by Hegarty, you're getting milled by Morrissey, you know, and it's just putting this pressure on you all the time. And there's this little bit of a groan and people are kind of saying, will you let the ball go and let the ball do the work? But when you let the ball do the work, you're in big trouble as well with them, because that half back line are set.
What you're saying there about how much they're enjoying it and really going for it, I think a little bit of that has to do with, like, every county has a race memory. Every, you know, we all come from where we come from. And, like, Limerick hurling for so long was not just in the doldrums, but, like, you know, there's a reason the Limerick hurling book is called Unlimited Heartbreak. Like, it was, you know, that they had so many years of, you know, disaster and, you know, coming close without getting there and all of that sort of stuff. Like, it was amazing to sit there yesterday and realize that, like, it's only 3 years since we were sitting in the stadium and watching the whole of the, like, half the ground not being able to watch Joe Canning take a last minute free from 100 yards in case he would equalize. Like, this team is enjoying itself and the county is enjoying itself and Limerick hurling is enjoying itself so much. And I think that has to be a part of it, that they understand that the wheel turns and, you know, that this won't last forever. But, like, they're not being in any way bashful about the fact that they are currently the preeminent hurling side in the country. They're not, you know, there's no false modesty in them at all. No. Like when I was when I was talking to Gerard Hegarty afterwards, you know, and I was kind of saying, like, I'd done the pen picks for the Limerick team during the week, and I had to recheck them a couple of times because I realized that, like, Declan Hannan is the oldest outfield player and he's 28. And I was saying this to Hegarty. I was going, like, yous aren't going anywhere. And he was going, he says, Jesus Christ. He says, I turned 27 last week and I feel old in that dressing room. No, we're absolutely not going anywhere. And, like, that is fantastic to see. You know, there's no kind of, we'll just keep at it. They absolutely know how good they are and they're loving it. And you have to admire that, considering, as I say, the race memory of the county, considering where they have come from and what, like, even Gerard Hegarty's father went through, you know, like he was part of the Limerick team that Offaly beat in that ridiculous final in 94. Like, what is in their sort of ancestry, of course they're enjoying this, and damn right they should.
Yeah, and there were also 40,000 fans there yesterday. Yeah. So, I mean, they're going to show more of their personality. It's easier to go around jumping around, G-ing up the fans when there are actually fans in the stadium to, yes, to G-ing up. It probably is worth asking. Sorry, Murphy, you wanted to come back in.
I suppose we spent so much of last week bigging up your plan, Jamie. What do you think Cork were trying to do? And we'll try and work back from there. Because, you know, it's not to say that whatever they were trying to do failed miserably. A lot, because the point, as you made last week, was everything could go right in your plan that you drew up, and Cork might still lose the game. But what did you think Cork were trying to do yesterday, say with Keane Lynch, for instance, or more generally trying to protect the full back line? Two things, obviously, that didn't work out for them.
I don't think we did try to protect the full back line enough, to be quite honest. First of all, what I want to say is, like, do you know what? It's easy to sit here and be wise after the fact, and I've no intention of doing so, because, to be honest with you, this is one of those occasions where it's actually not easy to sit here and be wise after the fact, because watching it back, even now, I'm still kind of like, Jesus, like, what could you have done yesterday to win that game? Like, and like I said at the top, like, short of sneaking five more fellas onto the pitch, maybe, like, that's about it. Like, honestly, it was one of those days for Limerick. I firmly do believe, like, when they performed to their level, and they are the best team in Ireland, and if they perform to their level, you are not going to beat them. Do you know, at the moment, they are actually that far ahead of everyone, do you know? But in terms of, like, that doesn't mean Cork didn't make mistakes, and that doesn't mean there won't be regrets. Like, I suppose the first big mistake I felt was Cork went man-to-man in the half-back line. Coleman was a little... was pretty tight on Lynch at times. Cadogan was man-marking Morrissey, and Tim was man-marking Hegarty, especially in the first half. And what it meant was that, like, when the boys ran across the line, the boys went with them, and it just opened up huge holes. Like there was huge holes in front of Flanagan. I think I'll be straight out. I think we got the matchup wrong inside. I think we said it last week that Flanagan would not suit Downey, in terms of that, like, it wouldn't suit Downey to be on Flanagan. And it didn't. He moved him right to left, and he exposed, you know, the thing that Robert is worst at, which is that right to left lateral movement. Now, Flanagan is very, very good at it. Like, and I'm not trying to be too critical or smart, be a smart ass about it when it comes to Rob, because I think he's been excellent all year. But it is probably the main weakness in his game, and it's probably the big strength in Flanagan's game. And I think Flanagan maybe was a little bit underappreciated going into the game, because he caused Cork massive trouble. But, like, the half-back kind of set-up, like, there was a couple of stages where, like, Tim was back, but Tim O'Mahony was on the opposite 65 once or twice with Hegarty, you know. There was one, the Declan Hannan point, where Keane Lynch got the ball out underneath the Cusick stand. Coleman was with him. He pops a pass, and Hannan steps up into that area where the Cork half back line should be, drives it over the bar. You know, there was a moment where Keane wins a ball, or Limerick work a ball out, and Keane strikes a long diagonal into Gillan for, it was actually the moment Peter Casey got injured. But when you actually see that from the pictures on telly, the space between the half back and full back line for Cork is massive. And look, like, that is how good Limerick's half forward line is, that it asks the question of you, do you go with them or do you leave them off? Derek said it a couple of weeks back, where, remember, we talked about Callum Lyons was told probably to hold and not go with Gerard Hegarty, and he didn't, and Gerard Hegarty scored 7 points from playing an All-Ireland final. But then, you know, Cork leave the spaces open in this game, and Gerard Hegarty scores 2-2. So it's kind of like, it's like how do you deal with them? Like, they're just, they ask that question of you. Like, but I think that was the biggest mistake that Cork made, was the two wing backs, especially, you know, the kind of, we matched up, like, and it's grand. I think you match up in the full back line, and in the half back line, you kind of have to hold your shape a bit more. Like you will never see Dermot Burns on the left wing for Limerick ever. Like, you know, like, the, not even if there's a fire, as the stepbrother saying goes, like, you will never see him on the left hand side, you know. You will never see Kyle Hayes not in seven, in terms of when he's named there. Obviously, you could see him somewhere else, but when he's named at seven, he plays at seven, you know. And that gives them a structure that, like, it's very hard to break down, and it means that they'll only ever kind of concede so many chances to you. But like I liked a lot of what Cork's plan was as well. Do you know, like the way they moved Limerick around a few times. You could, the Cork goal, it was very much a trademark Cork goal this year. Do you know, like I feel like I saw that goal against Waterford in the league, against Kilkenny in the Championship, and I saw it again at the weekend. Do you know where they, and they targeted that side of Limerick's defence. Seamus Harandy got another point down that side of defence. They popped another ball out. They won another free. Actually, another run down that side of the defence from Harnady gave Cork another half goal chance where he worked it out to Jack O'Connor and he looked for Shane Kingston. So like they actually got joy in attacking areas down there, you know. But like I said, like it kind of felt a small bit like finger in the dam stuff, like that they were just like, it was just one of those days where like, you know, like Cork could have produced their maximum yesterday. I know they didn't, but they could have produced their maximum. And let's be honest, like they still would have lost. Like it was just one of those days where Limerick were irrepressible.
Mal, what do you reckon?
Yeah, it was interesting to hear Kieran Kingston talk afterwards. Like, I heard a lot of people kind of go, God, that'll set Cork back years now. And I really just didn't get that sense of them afterwards, in that when you get your arse handed to you like that, it's there's a kind of a comfort in it. I know it's obviously terrible, but like you can kind of go, as Jamie's saying there, our lads, sure, even if we'd put 20 people on the pitch, we still wouldn't have won. You know, there is literally the first words out of Kieran Kingston's mouth was, lads, 'tis all about Limerick. You know, he you know, and now maybe that was a bit of deflection, but he was very, his whole thing was, lads, you know, look at Limerick. Like he was sort of just kind of going, sure, what could we have done? You know, like his great phrase was just like trying to hold the tide back with a bucket. Mm-hmm. And like there was a bit of that, but like I think it would be dangerous enough for Cork to dismiss the game, you know, over the winter or whenever they go to start again next year, because if you sort of, and maybe this goes for the rest of hurling as well, if you kind of go, ah, sure, what could we have done, then what will you ever do? You know, like there's Limerick are, they are, as I put in the paper, they're an ocean clear of everybody, but you know, you've got to cross that ocean at some stage, and the ocean will be crossed. Like I wasn't overly impressed with Cork afterwards, in that they were kind of, yeah, look, it wouldn't really have mattered what we did, but you know, that's not to say that they went in thinking that, or that they were defeatists going in, but like there is that sort of comfort in getting a hiding. You know, you can walk away sort of going, ah, you know.
You can have the shame, or the pain. So it's what we say. You get a hammering and you have a bit of shame, but there's no real pain in it. Like, it's kind of like you've got 40 minutes before the game is over to settle it with yourself. Whereas like, you know, you lose by a point or two and there's like, what if I did this? What if I did that?
Yeah, my view, I saw was a Ken McGrath, one of the Waterford players was saying, geez, I'm only now finally over, like having seen what happened to Limerick there, I can kind of feel a bit better about what happened to us against Kilkenny, and that was a decade ago, you know?
I tell you though, there's a slight difference there in that, like, I remember 08 and I remember the build-up in Waterford and I remember the bit of fallout over that winter and all that sort of stuff. Waterford didn't get to too many All-Ireland finals, or, you know, they don't get, you know, through their history. And, okay, they got a monumental beating that day, but part of it as well was, you know, Jesus, lads, when will we be back in a final? That kind of stuff. Whereas I did meet Cork people yesterday before the game, kind of going, well, how are you? Are you nervous? What are you thinking? You know, sure, if they don't win this one, they'll win it in the next 3 or 4 years, you know. And like, you know, and look, that has a more recognisable foundation, you know, with the underage success that is coming and all of that. But there is that sort of feeling within Cork at the minute, look, we will get there eventually. And that probably takes a bit of the sting out of a hiding like that as well.
I would say as well, before we move on, Malachy, that I agree with you, that like Cork shouldn't dismiss yesterday, you know, like with the things like I've said, that like, and I do believe like a short of putting 20 on, we wouldn't have won the game yesterday, but that doesn't mean there aren't big lessons to be learned from it, you know, like just in my own coaching career, like, and like in 2019 we played in the Fitzgibbon Cup final. We did well to get there, I'll be honest, with a team that was good, like, but we were plugging a few holes and stuff, and we got an all merciful hiding off UCC in the final. We got an awful beating. And, you know, a lot of people were saying to me after, like, Asher, Jesus, look, you know, nothing you could do about that. Like, they were just too good. They're too good. And I remember it really did piss me off, actually, because I took that final very hard, because I kind of said, like, well, no, it's my job as a manager to make sure we don't get a fucking hiding like that. You know, even if we're not good enough, it's our job as management to make sure that we're set up well enough that we can compete no matter what. And, like, I think Cork as a management, and I hope Cork as a management, you know, will lick their wounds for a few days, but that there'll be a serious debrief and say, right, leaving aside the fact that they performed for the ages and we wouldn't have beaten them anyway, how could we have set up better? How could we counteract these things better? And how do we, when we, like you said, you know, bring through this talent in the next couple of years, how do we get them up to speed so that they don't just, you know, fall prey to the same traps that were set against us? Because, like, I felt like Limerick a couple of times as well, like, there was once or twice Cork took a sharp puck out and Limerick showed a Cork player where they wanted him to go. Like, it was like watching soccer at times, you know, where teams are setting pressing traps. Like, and once or twice Cork just bought it hook, line and sinker. Like, there was one time Robert Downey carried a puck out down under the Hogan stand and he starts soloing out into the traffic and you're kind of like, you rarely see, and it was something that just dawned on me watching it back this morning, you rarely see Limerick back solo the ball. Do you know? It's like they look up, they may play a short, but it's like they look up, bang, 20 yards into hand, move you. Cork made those mistakes. Niall O'Leary soloed another ball out into the contact and hand passed it to a fella coming against him 2 yards away. Do you know, like, these are all mistakes that, like, yeah, you lost the game to the better team and the better team won, and that's all fine, and you can write those things off, and I think they're right to write those things off in public. But I do think, like, Cork would be very foolish, and you're right, like, Cork could be foolish to write this off totally and say, right, sure, look, it was just one of those days, nothing we could do, blah blah blah. Like, they do need to sit down and say, right, even allowing for the fact that it was one of those days, what could we do better? Because, like you said, like, there's an ocean between them. Like, you have to cross it at some stage, or at least you have to start building a dinghy to try and get across it. Like, you have to start putting something together. Like,
Jamie, can I take you up on something you said earlier on? You were talking about how Peter Casey was the man of the match when it was still a match in the early stages.
Yeah.
I'm not sure your old Fitzgibbon Cup player, Keane Lynch, will thank you for that, considering in the first 2 minutes of the game, he'd already scored a point and set up a goal. He had, was it 7 touches in the first half, Murph tells me? Assists for 2 goals.
And Malachy
points.
Told me.
Okay, well, we're passing it on. Eventually, this information's getting out there. So, 2 goals and 4 points assisted, and he got that point at the in the first, was it the first score of the game? I mean, come on, this guy was man of the match, and he's the best hurler in the country.
He is definitely the best hurler in the country, and he was man of the match in the sense that I don't think you can argue. Like, you know, look, I'm saying tongue in cheek that Peter Casey was among man of the match when it was a match. If you give it to Keane Lynch, fair enough, you give it to Keane Lynch. If you give it to Gerard Hegarty with his 2-2 and, you know, in the first, or his 2-1 in the first half, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Like, do you know, like, it's kind of like the All-Star. It's like the All-Stars, like, you know, we all roar and bawl about who we think should get one, and then we're asked, right, who do you take out? And it's like, oh, shit, I hadn't thought that far ahead, do you know? it's one of those ones where, like, yeah, like, Keane won't give a shit, by the way. So it's not that he won't thank me for it, he won't care. Keane was outstanding. He really did show, like, he's a genius. We said it last week. His basic skills are so good. His not-so-basic skills are even better. His awareness of what's going on in the pitch, like, he always knows where he is. It's amazing. Like, you know, like, the Limerick second goal is like it's the perfect example of, he just, it doesn't matter what way he's facing, because he sees the picture. I've said it 100 times now, like people are probably sick of me saying it. Like, he sees the full picture all the time. Like, he just has an idea of what's going on in the pitch all the time. Constantly harping back to soccer. He was an outstanding soccer player himself. He actually used to play for St. Kevin's in Dublin. He used to go up to play for St. Kevin's. And I know he had trials across the water as well, but, like, he's one of these guys who just has that kind of 360 vision of the pitch. Like, and again, like, not to sound wise after the fact, but, like, if you're too tight to him, there are just scores coming off him. If you stand off him, like Cork did in the second half, he's just going to go score them himself. So, like, like I said, like, I'm not trying to say, oh, I'm a genius, we should have stood off him and marked the space, because he'd have probably clipped over 6 or 7 points then, like, and then I'd look like an even bigger Egypt. So like, it's one of those ones where, like, I don't know what you do with him, like, to be quite honest, like, but I know that, like, you know, like, Mark Coleman was literally touch tight for the second goal, and the ball just flicked over his head to a runner from Gerard Hegarty. So it's kind of like, what do you do? You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. If you stand off him, he scores 4 or 5 points like he does in the second half. Like,
and you know what? And you know what, Jamie? The weird thing about it is, right, that if you deny guys like Joe Canning or Shamie Callanan or TJ Reid scores, like, you know, that hurts them, you know? Whereas Keenish doesn't care if he doesn't score or not.
Yeah.
And, like, that's kind of the big difference in a way. It's like, you can get under the skin of those other guys by denying them scores.
But, or Tony, like, Kelly.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
yeah. These guys...
They will start making the odd, you know, mental error if they haven't scored. Whereas with Keane Lynch, he doesn't care. Therefore, you don't have that in your armory to deny it.
Yeah. It's that, you know, with those guys, generally speaking, the play ends with them. Do you know, they're there for a particular reason. The play ends with them. Whereas, like, Keane kind of, you know, I think Kieran, his uncle, was calling him like the Messi of hurling. But Keane's way of playing, it actually, and I can say this, Keane's a Man United fan, like yourself and myself. It reminds me of do you remember Wayne Rooney came out with quotes a few years ago where he said that, he had that year where he played up front for United and he scored bucket loads of goals, but he actually didn't like playing football that year because he wanted to be involved in the play more. And Keane strikes me almost like that, in that, like, yeah, he'll score if it's on, that's great, he'll enjoy that. But Keane actually likes the whole notion of linking the play, you know, of being involved in everything rather than just kind of, I'm here to finish and that's it. Do you know, that's not his kind of, it's not the way he is in anything. Do you know, he's kind of like this guy that just wants to bring people together, and when it comes to with a ball in his hand, then it's the exact same. So I'm not remotely surprised. But like you said, like, it's, and like, I posed this question to Derek, was it two shows ago when we were on, two or three weeks ago, where I just said, like, Derek, like, how do you stop a guy who's a link man? Because it's easier to say how to stop Tony Kelly and TJ and all these lads. It's not going to be my job to ever try and go and stop them from scoring. But I suppose, like you said, stop them scoring, you've kind of stopped them. Like, whereas with this fella, like, how do you stop a guy that has 4 or 5 different kind of tricks, and, like, he's quite happy if he's not scoring, if you're following him, he's popping the ball into runners, into the space he leaves. Like, again, you know, the Kyle Hayes goal against Tipperary, where Keane, like, comes out so far, Dan McCormack goes with him, he pops it, and Hayes goes beyond Dan McCormack, and then, you know, it's the rest is history. We spoke about it last week anyway. But, like, he's quite happy, if you are touch tight, to just drag you to places where you know you shouldn't be, do you know?
What do the next 5 or 6 years look like, Mal? you know, we're looking at a team now as good as Kilkenny were at their peak, I think. So how do you go about trying to close the gap? Are we looking at 3-4 in a row of champions here?
Well, I mean, what's obviously going to happen is Brian Cody's going to take one look at them and run for the hills and decide he has his work done. And it's no surprise Sheedy has raced away to the confines of his own civil life as well. You know, nobody's going to want to play these guys for the next few years.
Joe Canning's retired.
Joe Canning's gone. Yeah, like, you know, they're all gone. Cork are just going to wait for the young lads. So may as well just give them the next three anyway.
I feel like the next three, and we'll reconvene in 2025 and see where we are then. I think that's a good plan, a good solid plan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Michael Fennelly will have Offaly up by then. And you know, it'll all be fine. It will be really interesting. I think a couple of things. I think, first of all, you know, the thing, going back to Kingston, actually, I asked Kingston yesterday, what's the hardest thing about playing them? And straight away, the first word he said was physicality. You know, he says, you know, they're brilliant at everything, but they are huge, and they know how to use their physicality, and they play on the edge. Now, and look, I was surprised there wasn't ironic cheers yesterday when Hegarty finally got a yellow card, having fouled his way through two All-Ireland finals and two All-Ireland semi-finals without seeing a yellow card. But he was even a bit nonplussed at finally getting one after only four fouls yesterday. And by the way, not that I didn't see it at the time, I fully admit this, but Kane Lynch's suplex on your man was fairly dodgy, I thought, when I saw it back last night. Mm-hmm. You know, a less so obviously gilded and beloved player might have been in a bit more trouble than he eventually was for that. But look, yes. So but sorry, going back to Kingston, he was saying, look, they play on the edge, they don't go over it, they do all that sort of stuff. But his point was, when you go into them for a 50-50 tackle, currently it's not 50-50. They have that edge. Now, what'll be interesting to see is how Intercounty Hurling responds to that. I thought it was really fascinating piece, Vincent Hogan's piece on Saturday, where he would talk to an unnamed Waterford player who said that the first quarter of the semi-final wasn't planned. Like, we are all sitting in the stand going, well, Waterford have clearly decided to target Grown Hegarty, to target Dermot Burns, to target Tom Morrissey, and wire into them and see where it gets them. Whereas whoever this player was saying to Vincent, no, that's just the way it worked out, because, you know, that's what they draw you into. But we didn't go out to try and physically dominate them because we knew that there was no point in doing that. And I think that gives an interesting clue as to where hurling will go. Look, absolutely, teams are going to have to be physical, they're going to have to be in huge, really well conditioned and all of that. But I don't think that's what's going to eventually beat them, if and when it does beat them. The Limerick are going to have to be a problem that is thought around, in precisely because they have got to this point, because there's so much thinking goes into their play. Like, you know, what Jamie was describing earlier about Gillan's goal, and, you know, Dermot Burns having the freedom of the park to either pick left or right. Like, that sort of stuff is, of course, drilled and worked out and thought ahead. And it wasn't that Shamie Flanagan and Aaron Gillan and Peter Casey got the ball in space so many times yesterday because they're just quicker than the guys that were marking them. That isn't how it works. They were quicker off the mark. They were a half a step out in front because they knew where the ball was going. They knew where the guys giving them the ball wanted to play it and would definitely play it. So that's a roundabout way of saying I have no idea who it is that is going to come and challenge them. But whoever does, it's not going to be by wiring into them and, you know, going toe-to-toe, man-on-man combat. I think they're a problem that's going to have to be thought around rather than beat around.
Yeah. My one thing about that, though, Malachy, and I'll put this to you, Jamie, to finish, is that, you know, this is in ways a similar question to what Kilkenny asked of hurling after that 2008 final, which we've mentioned a couple of times already, and how Tip faced up to that in 2009 in a losing effort, and then in 2010 when they won, was the physicality got them to the start line at the same, you know, at the same time as Kilkenny, and then from there it was their hurling ability that got them over the line. And I still kind of feel like that's how it's going to happen in the future, Jamie. That, like, the, you know, it's not that you're going to, you know, brutalize this Limerick team, but you're probably going to have to get to a level of physicality where you can compete with them and then beat them playing hurling. So it's kind of, it has to be a combination of the two. Like, that was the bar that Kilkenny set for Tipperary. They couldn't quite hit it in 2009, but they did hit it in 2010, and that's how this is going to end.
Oh yeah, like it's a case, and I think even I think Malachy's kind of taking that as a given, like that, like it's more that you have to not get beaten by the physicality than that you have to beat them with it. You have to kind of you said, like okay, look, we're not going to lose it there, but that's not the plan. But we're going to be at such a level that we don't get brutalized, because, like, you know, even we spoke as well about the kind of attritional aspect of constantly getting hit by Limerick. Eventually you break. That happened against Cork, or happened to Cork, we'll say,
round about the halfway point in the Munster Championship. It happened around about the halfway point of the half, obviously, on yesterday. But you are going to have to get to the point where their physicality doesn't just overwhelm you first before you can then think your way around them. But I think Malachy's right, you do have to, they're at such a baseline at the moment that it's like, do you remember the thing in the Jack Charlton bed that Mark made where Jack said, we can't play that way because it'll take us too long to catch up trying to play the way that everyone else is already playing. Do you know, I don't have it exactly word for word, it struck me as such a great quote because it was like, that was like it. That showed all the thought behind what he was doing, and that it wasn't just a, you know, like you said there the other day, Johnny Farner doesn't like it up him. Like, it's not, you can't go and do that, but you do have to. You can't go and mirror the way they play totally, because they're at such a level now that it'll take you too long to catch up, and by the time you do, they'll have found a new way to beat you anyway. What strikes me as so good about them is like that, what Malachy said there about, it's not that their inside forwards are just quicker than you or anything like that. I actually think what it is that the ball is getting to them quicker. Because if you look at where Limerick delivered the ball from, it's always such a prescribed place. Like, it's like, they don't, like, you never see, like, okay, Sean Finn has a size 37 hurley. I don't know if anyone knows that, but I may have said it here before or not, but he does, right? You ever watch it in his hand? It's nearly up to his nipples, like, right? The reason for that is he never hits the ball long grip. Watch him. Breaks it down. Either it's a short stick pass or it's a hand pass out. He doesn't hit the ball. That's it. He knows that's my job. And so why does he have a size 37 hurley? Because he can get hooks in and blocks in that he probably has no right to get in. Watch him the next day. If you watch it back, watch how long the hurley looks in his hand. Like, that's just a small, tiny snippet of the kind of attention to detail that they have with their style of play and their game plan. The whole plan is about, if we get the ball to someone central, he can go right and left. If he's too far back on the right-hand side, he's going up the line and Flanagan's coming out from the centre. And if we get up beyond the 65 on the sideline, we've got the big switch into space. Like, that's one very, very basic kind of thing that, in terms of delivery zones and where they deliver the ball from. So, like, it's that level of thinking in terms of how you use the ball that's required if you're going to get close to them, to be quite honest with you. And like you said, Murph, then getting to a level conditioning-wise where you don't just get hammered by that, and it doesn't matter how much thinking you've put into it. But like I said, I do agree with Malachy that, like, you can't actually go and try and bulldoze them, because they're so far ahead in that sense that they're just going to be getting further ahead. Like, you don't catch up to someone by doing the same thing as them. You have to catch up to them either by going faster than them, which I don't think is possible, or by doing something different, you know, taking a different road.
Jamie, listen, amazing today. Great stuff all season. Malachy, thanks so much. And thank you, Malachy, for not mentioning the Dubs either and how you were right on that one. You've been the bigger man here.
I don't remember. Why? What was that? I forget what you're talking about.
I definitely didn't smear your good name at any point over the last...
Oh, God, no. I don't listen to this podcast. And you're
definitely looking forward to the club championships as well.
Oh, that's another one. Jamie had an issue with Malachy previously. Listen, that's for another day. Mal, Jamie, thanks a million.
See you, Mal. See you, lads.
Cheers, lads.
So I went to Ireland and I had a famous press conference where they wanted to know everyone in the world and had got the job except me. And got on with the job then. I had thoughts on international football, how we should play. Everybody played the same way in the world. I went to the World Cup in Mexico. They were like peas in a pod. They played through a playmaker. They all played a sweeper. They all played possession football. And nobody would commit anybody forward until the playmaker was in possession in a good area, and then they would commit themselves a little bit. And I thought, well, we can't enter this fray with the Irish team and play that way, because it'll take us years to catch up and produce a team with the quality that they had got, the type of game they played. So we introduced a game like, we play the ball into the corners, condense the areas, put them under pressure and play from there. And it worked a charm. It wasn't a knockabout take your time game. It was a rush game, more of the sort of game that the Irish expected of their own Gaelic players. You get the ball forward, you compete, you chase people, you close people down, you create excitement, you win balls when you shouldn't win balls, you commit yourself to the game. A lot of the pundits didn't like it, but the teams that we played against hated it. They never experienced anything like we dictated to them. I mean, Ireland actually beat Brazil. Not many people know that, but we did. Okay, it was at Lansdowne Road, it was 1-0. But we beat Brazil, and we've beaten every team of any quality in the world. Brady again. Yes! Have I missed football? Yes, I have. I miss the involvement with the players, because I'm not really a manager, I'm a coach. I miss it when I go to a football match, because I've nothing to go to the football match for. Unless I'm supporting the club. I love the North East clubs, I'd like to see them do well. So I'm on their side. But I've nothing to look at and see. I've no player to watch. I've no analysis to do on the game. I've no notes to make. I've no preparation to do for a game that's coming up. I've no young lads to have a look at or try or to talk to or to try and bring through. But then I look at it and I'm 62. The team needed to be restructured and rebuilt. And when you've been there 10 years, that makes it that much harder. I'd done me bit. It was time for me to leave. And I suppose now, after 10 years, I'm as much Irish as I am English. I am now an Irish citizen, not an honorary. I'm an Irish citizen. I've got my passport, my wife's got a passport. I've got a house over there. I get back and forth whenever I can. I love the place to death. Yes, yes, we want. I promise to take Mick Garone, we're taking Mick Garone.
And listen, have you a preference again? We asked you before, Italy or Uruguay?
I'm not really bothered. We're there, we're in the last eight for the first time in my history, and it's magic. I'm delighted for the lads.
Well done, congratulations, sir.
Cheers,
thank you.
And good luck to the people back home.
Great.
Hope they have a good party.
Murph, one more loosely related item, loosely related to the hurling from the weekend. Last Friday, you had a brilliant chat with US Murph about his favourite sports movie of all time. Sounds like his favourite movie of all time, the extremely schmaltzy Field of Dreams.
Is this heaven?
It's Iowa.
Iowa?
The reason you guys were talking about this, Major League Baseball last week reenacted that film for an actual game between the Yankees and the White Sox. It was all a little bit bizarre. And
yeah,
it
doesn't sound any less mental when you say it on.
No, it was beautifully captured by yourself and Brian, who really knows the intricacies around the Field of Dreams and its place in American culture. But you and Ken expressed your surprise that there's never been a GAA movie that's cashed in on the nostalgia that surrounds hurling in particular. I'm afraid to tell you, there exists
well,
such a movie.
Cashed in on. I mean, I don't think too many people have actually seen this movie, but I'll allow it.
Thanks to Ray Wingnut, among others, for alerting us to the existence of Clash of the Ash.
We're not getting any ball in the forward line. What are we supposed to do? We're losing at midfield.
Shut up! I'm in charge here. And if you came up training, maybe you'd get more of the ball. You're lucky to be on the team at all. If you don't pull your socks up, you're coming off. So be warned. Right, the first ball that comes near you, get in there and swing your stick. Let them know what it's going to be like if they want to catch the ball. There'll be plenty of time for goals afterwards. Go on now.
See, that's what Cork needed yesterday. Just swing a few hurls at them. Don't worry, the goals, you can score the goals later.
Pull hard, he's no relation is not the best idea, or is not the best advice I would give to anyone playing this Limerick hurling team. But nevertheless.
What an oversight, Murph. Have you ever heard of that movie?
Oh, I have heard of it. I've even read there is a book released by, edited by Paul Rouse and Mark Duncan. Mm-hmm. What was it called? It's like a history of the GAA, and there was actually, you know, the GAA as represented on in television and film. And this was one of the, I've never actually sat down to watch the movie, but maybe that's what I'll do this week on. Maybe I'll sit down and watch The Clash of the Ash.
A quick look on YouTube tells me it's only 50 minutes. I don't know if that's a full movie, but if it is, that's
yeah, it must be more than that. I mean, that's right. Not a movie. That's just a... And listen, Owen, More, I will report back on the Clash of the Ash as the week progresses.
Yeah, actually, that does sound like a nice little... Sounds like a real, probably closing link on Friday sort of a
sort of vibe.
Yeah, just let's get to the weekend with a bit of nonsense.
If anyone's left listening at this stage, they deserve whatever shit we give them at that stage. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, by the way, I should mention US Murph, who was top of the world last Friday, talking about Field of Dreams. Also, San Francisco Giants are dominating this season, but his mood soured mere hours after going up. Yeah. It was amazing. So he went to the... there was a local derby on against the Oakland A's. It took him hours to negotiate traffic around the stadium and park and all that kind of stuff. So when the A's president put up a tweet saying, "Let's play ball," or something, you know, stupid like that, Brian responded with, "You absolute clown. Tell that to the thousands that was stranded outside because of your shitty dime store operation." And I thought it might have been a fit of pique. I checked to see if Brian maybe took that down, you know. I don't know if it's great practice for local broadcasters to be calling the owners of the clubs clowns and so forth. No, it's still up there. And later on, the camera on TV picked out US Murph. US Murph with his boys. And US Murph is so pissed off looking. I think he's going to be just taking his seat, but he's just, it's anger everywhere.
I've literally never seen his face contorted like that. I mean, obviously, he's an extremely optimistic, sunny character. But yeah, man, he had reached his wit's end. He was full Michael Douglas falling down.
They were not going to be getting their popcorn or whatever they like to get.
Oh, man.
Oh, it's brilliant. Yeah, they also lost that game as well, but they've beaten the A's twice since then. So Brian is back on top form if social media is anything to go by. You can listen to that chat as well if you sign up for the World Service. Oisin and Flynn are on during the week. Don't miss that one. Thanks, Ciarán. Good fun. Cheers.
Thank you, Owen.
Bye, everyone. Take care.
His name is Owen McDevitt, a podcaster who dominates the Irish airwaves.
What phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuaders of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.